occasionally you get through the media news cycle. One subject matter that came to my attention was in the wake of the El Paso shooting, where 20-some people got shot. And right away, there was a narrative formulated by mainstream media, big guys such as New York Times or Amazon Post, I'm sorry, Washington Post, that Trump is a racist. So I was able to dissect it to the degree where several different articles came out of completely out of nowhere, including New York Times, public radio, for example, which I really took as a good example.
It's not just the mainstream or the commercial media who say that Trump is a racist.
Well, it is true, but I think the issue here is, and I would absolutely not dispose this notion. However, the arguments which were made on this is where the really issue is. The project matter was of the so-called imposition of the so-called public charge, which means when immigrants come here, they are forbidden by X number of years to draw public benefits. This is basically to discourage abuse and also a notion where, to get rid of the so-called quote-unquote freeloaders in our society. So this has been really a historical notion that goes back into 1600s, still under colonial statutes in Massachusetts, for example.
You say that's an existing law, or is it something that used to exist and is reintroduced?
This is actually existing law, and this was codified in laws in the 1880s, if I remember correctly. However, it was never enforced. This is the first time where the federal government said they're going to be start enforcing this, specifically when it comes to sponsorships for people who are coming to, and to as a spouses and other, visa applicants.
There, this kind of laws, it goes further than the US. I mean,
Oh, yes.
we just have a new Flemish government, and we also have some kind of laws in there that social benefits are being cut for newcomers. Often Denmark is taken as an example because they were the first in Europe to start with that. So regardless of what you used to have in the US, it's a trend.
Yes, this is neoliberalism because at the end of the day, what neoliberalism enforces is
Well,
so-called market rule, money
it's
rule.
some kind of yes, neoliberalism maybe, but combined with nationalism and and anti-immigrant policies.
What was really interesting and completely false in this regard, how U.S. media has portrayed it, was right away it was turned as an element of the quote-unquote race warfare. And several different outlets, including Chicago Public Radio, in collaboration with the Associated Press, stating that this issue supports white immigration to this country, which is outrageous. It's extremely outlandish, outrageous assertion, specifically when the U.S. has had a really very minimal immigration from the European countries or white, quote-unquote, white countries in many, many years since the World War II. So I delved into this. I got the statistics. And as I thought, as my hunch, it was proven correct. It was completely false. But when I contacted the WBEZ, which happened to be public radio here in Chicago, as well as the Associated Press, about my findings, and right away, as it turned out, the story was dropped. The heading after I changed.
Yes, you sent the link last week to me. Yes. So, but is that it's not a major story that is brought that Trump would be promoting like white immigration or something like that.
Well, this is the major frame of the conversation that took place. Now, Trump, for example, Trump is a racist, therefore Trump supports white immigration, which is absolutely not true. It was a socioeconomic immigration. They want wealthy people to come here, and it's always
No,
been like this.
it's more that he just doesn't want Africans and Arabs and Mexicans and
I disagree. I think, as a result of end result of his policies, this would be the result. He wants basically wealthy people to come to the U.S., regardless, because as it turned out, we have a scheme in the U.S. where if the immigrant, I think, spends about $500,000 to $700,000, they can get a so-called investor visa. And the biggest advantage, people who have benefited from this scheme are coming from Asia, let's say India, China, and other places. So this has got nothing to do with race. It's just basically a socioeconomic status. And this is obviously the
maybe
result.
there are two things. There's the policy in reality, which is what you just ex are explaining, and then there's the rhetoric, which is racist and scaremongering by saying that we are being invaded by South Americans.
Yeah, well, it is, but I think fundamental issue, what the media should really, for example, focus upon, is about why that happens. For example, our never-ending, support of right-wing governments, let's say, overthrowing coups, overthrowing legitimate governments like in Honduras, or our export of our own criminals into Central America. The kids who committed crime happen to not have a legal status, therefore were deported to places such as El Salvador, where those basically trained criminals were able to implant themselves in their own countries of birth and create a variety of different criminal enterprises, which local governments were simply not equipped, not having the resources to fight, both legally and police-wise. So this is not, what's really interesting here is the conversation about people coming across the border from the south doesn't really look at root causes, and root causes are political instability and socioeconomic stability, which were exacerbated, for example, under Obama administration, specifically when comes to the overthrow of the Zelaya government, and Hillary Clinton was spearheading that. So this is, nobody looks at.
In Honduras, eh?
Absolutely.
Yes.
So this nobody's looking at this. So in other words, they would just simply use anything to attack Trump without any kind of merit whatsoever. And the funny thing is, when they're confronted with my findings in this case, one after another, they change the line of the story without even apologizing to the readers or listeners that this is not the right way to, that they made a mistake. And now, moving to another subject matter, the so-called Ukraine gate. As it turns out, Michael J. Glennon, I've read his book, I highly recommend it. It's called About the America's Deep State, has really mentioned one thing that no matter how many leaders in Washington come and go, it is always about foreign policy that kind of stays the same and protects the American corporate interests. And this is truly something that's really well described into this fold. First of all, US media, almost without exception, got right on the bandwagon calling people who leaked the information as a quote-unquote whistleblowers. And ironically, 2 days before this whole issue, identity of the quote-unquote whistleblower came about, I even mulled in one of the conversations I had with one of the listeners is that most likely this is probably a setup by the US security apparatus. And lo and behold, the quote-unquote whistleblower came from the CIA, which gives you right away an example of this whole situation in the making. Meanwhile, they also were quoting someone, some expert, quote-unquote, advisor to the with the President Zelensky in Ukraine, that the guy was basically getting pressure from Trump, what have you. As it turned out to be, that the expert was actually not longer associated with the Ukrainian government, so the story kept changing. And when Trump attacked the quote-unquote whistleblower or leaker, I'm going to use it as a leaker, actually. It's more correct, because if you want to talk about whistleblowers, you got to take people who are taking a risk, personal risk, to release the information normally about crime that's being committed within their own organizations, about their own organizations, not somewhere else. Apparently, the guy who leaked the information was a CIA guy who was assigned to the Washington to the White House. And as it turned out, the person that originally leaked that information was not privy to the conversation itself. He was not present there. He was able to get the information from a second person, which I think correctly Trump referred to it as hearsay, because it is hearsay. And then the conversation has evolved into another quote unquote leaker or whistleblower that actually had correct information directly from the call, because that'd be some, they were listening to the call. So,
Well, there was an interview with Edward Snowden on Democracy Now! Last week, and one thing that he said is when there's a leak or there's a whistleblower, the first thing that is being done by the people who don't like it is to start talking about the whistleblower or the leaker. Now, that's exactly what you've been doing for the last 3 minutes. So not about the topic itself, not about what he's talking about, not about what is being leaked or
Well,
disclosed.
I'm going to get to this next. The issue is you have to really understand the context what it's coming from.
And by the way, he has been threatened by Trump.
There were some threats. Yes, well, there are some threats, called treason, what have you. But what?
He said he should be
Yeah.
killed, basically.
Yeah, as a traitor. So, and this is for the courts to decide. And,
Well,
Trump can.
how much worse can it get?
Well, I look. I'm not going to defend Trump, what Trump says, because I don't even have Twitter, so I don't even read tweets, whatever he does. on this other colleagues in the American media, which are so preoccupied with Trump's, you know, tweets, what have you. But now going to the subject matter, the idea is putting pressure on the Ukrainian government to suspend aid to Ukraine government. As it turned out, and I've covered Ukraine for 5 years now, and I have really good contacts in Kiev. The Zelensky administration has found out that the quote-unquote aid was frozen 1 month after the conversation. When the conversation took place, the aid was already blocked. However, the information, the Ukrainian government didn't realize it was blocked 1 month later after the conversation that took place. Getting to the nutshell of the case itself, what Trump did, I'm not sure if it's legal or not, but it's very questionable of using a pressure on a foreign power in order to get political favor, because it appears to be political favor. It is a political favor to reinvestigate the issue with Trump's, with Biden's son Hunter and his dealings within Burisma Holdings, which happens to be one of the largest gas companies in Ukraine. That said, and this is absolutely, and it's valid that they have to investigate this. However, I'm not, first of all, one thing which I find it's really problematic is the whole idea of the impeachment is that, first of all, lo and behold, Democrats do not have enough votes to have the impeachment trial and succeed in the trial itself, which is the first point. So this gives you an example of a political theater that's going to be taking place.
That's probably the main reason why Nancy Pelosi didn't want to hear about it until recently. It was the internal pressure within the party that that forced us to agree and to start the procedure.
Well, I think the idea is just of being very opportunistic because, first of all, you have to understand the whole issue of pressuring Ukrainians against, you know, their own will is a double-edged sword, especially in time when Joe Biden is involved. Because, you know...
Yeah, but I'm talking about your point that it's correct, of course, that they won't get anywhere, the Democratic Party, because they don't have the required votes. The only thing I'm saying is that you're probably right, and that's what Nancy Pelosi, so the leader in Congress, right, of the Democrats, that's why she didn't want to hear about it until...
Well, she's been convinced, supposedly, by her caucus on political machinations.
Yeah, because pressure increased on
Absolutely.
Her to do it. Yeah.
And actually, there were several different polls, I'm not sure if they rile board, not stating that if the Republicans were to give the quote-unquote secret ballot, most of them would vote for to indict, you know, Trump on impeach Trump, basically, which is completely fake. I don't know how this. I like to see the wording and how this poll was conducted to tell the truth. But the bottom line is, I can give you exactly the same thing what Nancy Pelosi said in 2003, after the illegal war in Iraq, where the same question was posed to her to impeach George W. Bush over the illegal invasion of Iraq, on a 60 Minutes program by CBS. And she basically said, Nancy Pelosi said flat out that the Democrats will not go the way to impeach George W. Bush because this would be, they don't have enough votes, and it would be quote unquote fool's errand. This is not the words she used.
Yeah.
So ironically, 16 years later, we are having the same conversation right now on the other side. And it seems to me that they're going to be going all the way through. But I think what's really damaging to the country itself.
The difference is that 15 years ago, all the Democrats, they voted for the war. It would have been very embarrassing for them. That's why, Pelosi is being put under pressure.
Well, except for Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders didn't vote for it. So you know, you have to take one out of this equation here. And that's the reason I'm very much, you know, a fan of Bernie Sanders, because he's been very fairly consistent throughout all these years in public service. But to say the least, what's happening right now politically is that Democrats are going full speed ahead. And it was a really great interview. One of the Democratic apparatchiks, you can say, from my district, Brett Schneider, who actually gave an interview to The Hill, which is one of the major media in Washington, actually, that covers politics, which was basically right on the talking points about this impeachment. And it was truly taken down by great American comedian Jimmy Dore, which I will send you the link to it, because it truly shows exactly how the politics in Washington really, really work. The bottom line is the impeachment trial, if it's going to take place or not, has to also reflect poorly on Democrats, because Joe Biden is specifically guilty of the same thing that Trump was trying to do. And frankly, the idea of using foreign power to, you know, it's almost like using the analogy from the great movie Casablanca, where the French police inspector went to the Rijkscafé in a movie and said that he's shocked that all the corruption is taking place there. Identically, back in 2016, I reported for the New York Observer on the Ukrainian situation, specifically post-revolution, and I reported on the firing of the Attorney General Viktor Chokin at a time, among other things. And once again, you know, you can link the story to that. And I didn't know at the time that Joe Biden was instrumental into this by actually withdrawing, threatening to withdraw the aid to Ukraine, military aid, to, you know, have him basically stop the, you know, aggression from the Russia, actually.
But Derek, so what I heard is that this attorney was extremely corrupt, and actually it was not just Biden or whatever. Maybe he should have recused himself and not have been involved in this. But actually, this attorney refused to hand over information to the British authorities on exactly the company his son is working for. So actually, by putting pressure to fire the attorney, he was actually increasing the risk of his son to be incriminated or being investigated. He increased the risk. It's not the other way around. So if then Biden asks to fire this attorney, it's not in his own interest or in his son's interest, because this attorney is refusing to hand over information.
Well, this was the official version. However, you have to understand that Nicolae Zlochensky, which happens to be oligarch that owned Burisma Holding at the time, and was under, I think, 18 or 19 million pounds investigation, had his assets in London frozen, and had all this pressure from the UK to have, you know, to not only be investigated, but also have the Ukrainian authorities collaborate with this, with the investigation from UK. All of a sudden, the son of Biden gets hired, and all those problems go away. The new guy, quote-unquote Lutsenko, who Biden referred to as a quote-unquote solid, comes in like a, you know, white horse, you know, a guy on the white horse is going to clean up all the Ukrainian AG office. It's going to make everything
so
go.
Lutsenko, is that the is that the new attorney?
The new one, yeah. They came after, which actually, by the way, which was fired in August last year. This year's in
also.
August.
Okay.
Yes, it was hired, and actually, right now he's been under investigation. This is the guy who's Biden referred to as a quote-unquote solid guy. But one thing you have to understand: one thing, it's really.
So what
amazing.
You're saying is that the investigation that on which the first attorney that was then fired after the request of Biden, and who didn't want to hand over the information, that the new one guy came in, but then that didn't go anywhere either.
Well, you know, investigation went away when under Lutsenko, because they closed it. They closed the investigation. And the funny thing is, so Lutsenko closes the investigation, the Burisma Holdings, everybody's happy. Then as a last act of Joe Biden's job as a vice president was to fly to Ukraine and actually give a speech how great the Ukraine government is doing, fighting corruption, how the great solid guy it is and stuff. It's almost like a payoff for having the pressure taken off of the Burisma Holdings. I mean, look, I don't have the evidence for this because you have to really look at the documents, but this is what my sources in Ukraine are saying. And timeline, you know, what happens after, you know, Burisma Holdings investigation is being dropped, and then Biden goes in, gives a great congratulatory speech to the current government of Poroshenko, which, by the way, the guy Lysenko, which happened to be quote-unquote the new AG, was the head of the party for Poroshenko, which nobody talks about. Actually, they're politically connected at the hip, basically. So this is not like, and the guy has a lot of history. You know, he was jailed and indicted in 2010 under Yanukovych government for some corruption. Then charges were cleared. You know, this is not a guy who comes completely out of the context, out of the blue, like a savior of the Ukrainian democracy of any historical and professional baggage. This is the guy, for crying out loud, who did not even have the law degree that becomes the AG.
It sounds like there's like two rivaling gangs or of mafia in Ukraine. One is more oriented than friends with the West, and the other one is more with Russia aligned. Is that two groups of oligarchs? Is that?
I would say six or seven instead of two, because each individual, you have to understand the way the Ukrainian political system.
But they seem to side either with one side or another, with one power block or the other.
Well, I mean, they're pragmatic to the degree they have to protect their own interests. So if it fits some part of, a Ukrainian oligarch, such as, Pinchuk, for example. If one feels that it's better to go with the West, they're going to go with the West. And one part of they feel it's better go with the East, they go with the East. So at the end of the day, putting people in position of power, it's not a new thing. I mean, Burisma Holdings have also had featured people such as Aleksander Kwaśniewski, which was the president of Poland, extremely unpopular, extremely corrupt. And, Russians are doing the same thing. Just look what happened to Gerhard Schröder being on the board of Gazprom, for example, using those political
connections. Yeah, the former chancellor of
exactly.
Social Democrat.
So this is not a new thing that's taking place here.